pointed this out every 3 years when this reading from the gospel comes up, that what Matthew has done in talking about take my burden upon you, he's quoted verbatim from one of the wisdom books in the Hebrew Bible. That he's saying, it is wisdom that will make your burden light. And anything other than that is going to complicate your life. So that's what he's talking about. He's personifying Jesus in a number of places in the New Testament. Jesus is described as the wisdom of God. So that's what's going on there. But I'd like to talk about this passage to the Romans. I've done this too several times, but it seems to me a perennial problem for us Catholics. This business of the warring of the flesh and the spirit. What that seems to mean on the face of it is that the body is bad. And the spirit is the only thing that's good. Well, that's total nonsense. No Jew would talk that way. Rather, that's filtered through a bunch of Greek philosophy, where you have this opposition between the body and the spirit, the immaterial part of us. Well, that was totally foreign to the Jews. The Jews didn't know anything about spirits. When the Jews used the word spirit, they were talking about the spirit of God, the enlivening power of God. And they were certainly not setting that in opposition to our bodiliness. Why is this important? Because, well, the Pope has pointed out, the present Pope, that is, over and over again, that we Roman Christians are fixated on sex. Because if there's any place where the body is loudest in its claims on us, it's in our sexuality. You know? And so we have this sexual fixation, and I grew up with it, maybe many of you did as well, but it is certainly not what the Jews had in mind. So we have as no less an authority than the prior Pope Benedict, who in that notorious talk that he gave at the University of Regensburg, where he talked about wherever Islam shows its ugly head, there's violence and murder and dishonesty and crookedness. Well, that's total nonsense, too. And if you read that whole talk, that's totally gratuitous. I still can't figure out why in the devil he picked this 13th century goof who made that claim to announce it again, especially in the contentious world we live in. But later on in the talk, he made this claim, which I find to be totally outrageous. He said, well, in the providence of God, the gospel went from the Semitic frame of mind, namely the Jews, to the Greek frame of mind. Saint Aristotle, pray for us. That's what he was getting at. Well, what if the gospel had gone to China first, or India first, or Africa first, all of which is quite as possible? Except that the Romans had built the best road system so you could get around easier. Certainly, no Jew, and Paul was a Jew, would talk about the opposition between the body and that immaterial part of us, assuming that exists, a soul. It's a purely Hellenistic, Greek understanding of the way we human beings are put together. As I said over and over again, for the Jews, to be a human being was to be a breathing body, and once you stopped being a breathing body, you were finished. You know, you were worm food. So they didn't make this nice, tidy distinction between body and soul, so that the soul doesn't have any parts, which means that it can't fall apart, which means it can't die, it's immortal, it's essentially immortal, would float around afterwards. We Catholics clearly, I'm old enough to remember that, maybe some of you are, to fixate it on sex. I mean, I was so gratified when Francis, very early on in his papacy, talked about this fixation. And said this totally skews our vision of the world. And all we're going to talk about is contraception. Homosexuality. Abortion. Well, we're wrong-footing it. There really are more important things than whatever sexual malfeasance we create for ourselves. It doesn't work. And yet, after hearing confessions for many, many years, I'm absolutely persuaded that the church, one of the primary evils that the church has brought into the world is its fear of sexuality. I'd sit in those little black boxes on a Saturday afternoon, and sure enough, somebody could say, "Father, I've sinned." And he knew perfectly well they were talking about something below the belt. They're not talking about their attitude toward other people. They're not talking about their generosity or their courage or their honesty. No, they're talking about their genitals, period. Well, again, folks, that's myopic in the extreme. And I say it has done profound damage because I know people whose lives have been ruined by this sexual fixation. That's all they can think about. That and that alone is sinful, you know. Again, I've said this many times before. In the seminary, in the moral theology courses, which were of dubious value at best, you could only talk about de sexto and de nono. That's Latin for the sixth and the ninth commandments, which had to do with matters sexual. If you were in the last 2 years, and I vividly remember this moron, Jesuit, who taught us moral theology, presumed to teach us moral theology, would come in with little 2x3 pictures of the female genitalia and pass them around in the class and said, "All right, I want all those copies back." As if somebody was going to take them to their room and do some weird thing. But he was a man truly formed in this false tradition of this fear of the body. Because that's what it does. It's profoundly alienative. You know? Sexuality is difficult and complicated at the best of times. It's mysterious. But then to fixate on that is positively perverse. Because then you don't have to worry about anything else, you know. There's a wonderful film called The Priest, a British film. I don't know whether anybody ever seen it. With the great Wilkinson, I forgot his first name. It was a priest who was living with his housekeeper, literally living with his housekeeper, this beautiful black woman. And he had an assistant, hyper-orthodox assistant, you know, ready to run around judging everybody, especially people's sexuality. And then it turns out he's homosexual. And it turns out he frequents gay bars and has this relationship with this other homosexual guy. And so the bishop gets wind of this, and my God, all hell broke loose, as you might well imagine. And he was treated like dirt. Nobody, he made a visit to his home parish where Wilkinson was, and nobody would go to communion to him. So they were so convinced he was perverse. So homophobia is bone deep in the Roman Church. It really is. I mean, if you look at all the legislation in the states about gay marriage or marriage equality. It is the Catholic bishops of the United States of America, together with the Mormons and some other enlightened Protestant groups, equally benighted, would spend millions of dollars to try to overturn those laws about marriage equality. See, what is the problem with this? We're misfocusing. First of all, we have a distorted view of sexuality. So we grow up, as I surely did, hating, or at least fearing, my own body. My mother imbued that in me as I was growing up. And there are very few things as alienative as that, as perverse as that, as turning life into some kind of superficial fight with your genitals. And this covers a whole realm. So Paul VI, against his own birth control commission, 85% of whom said we ought to legitimate contraception. He said, no, we can't do that because it's never been said. I don't think he knew very much history. I have the feeling it had been said. And so he reinforces the contraception objection, which has been echoed by the Polish Pope, the German Pope, and that's why Francis is such a breath of air to say, listen, we're fixated on that. And as I said, as a minister, the greatest concern I have is a profound inner deterioration. And that's not an exaggeration. Of people's lives and self-understanding. Because that's all they see as sin. Now, Father, I have sinned, and you knew exactly what was going to come after that. Well, that's wrong-headed. He's simply wrong-headed. That's not the central focus of sin by a long, long shot. Again, to go back to my seminary training, they sexto and they no-no, the sixth and the ninth commandments, were the only ones about non dater parvitas materiae, which means there's nothing that is lightly sinful about sex. You think about sex, you do something sexually, oh, you're hell-bent. There's no hope for it. Well, I think about all the adolescent boys, and I was an adolescent boy too, for whom masturbation, for instance, was an overriding issue because they had fixed on that. You masturbate, oh, you're going to hell. And that's, folks, if they're not more important things in life than that, we're in deep, deep trouble. And it's paradoxical because when I was teaching in the States, our director of vocation, the former army chaplain, would come and ask all the faculty to leave the classroom while he would regale people with his masturbation tables on the blackboards. And you masturbate this time. And then he said, this time and this time and this time, you're hell-bent 52 times or however many. And he would never let us in it. Then it turns out he was a pedophile. It's grotesque. How we can countenance uncomplainingly that kind of hypocrisy, that double-mindedness. So, what's going to happen? Not much. We will see what Francis does. The Polish Pope became famous because he gave a whole series of lectures on the theology of the body. If you read them, I'm not that sexually experienced, but I know that what is described was totally useless. It's like when you had intercourse, that was like two angels copulating. You know, there's no sweat, there's no sound, there's nothing. There are just these two immaterial beings coming together, and then they separated, and that was the end of it. And that's what he thought was the theology of the body. Jesus, I mean, think about it. If that's not as cockamamie as you can get, I don't know what is. So, we're waiting. And everybody works this out, of course, on his or her own terms. The meaning of their own sexuality and where it fits into the overall pattern of integrity or unintegrity of one's own life. But certainly what we've been delivered is so much rubbish, I will tell you. It is so much rubbish. And it would be all right if it weren't so destructive. Because everybody's puzzled about sex. Everybody is puzzled about sex. When I went to Africa, I thought, oh boy, I'm home free. You know, this is where everything is natural and blah, 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 blah. Not a bit of it. Not a bit of it. Sex was surrounded with all kinds of taboos. They were anything but enlightened about it. Because sex is mysterious. It simply is. There's nothing like it in life. So where are we left? Well, we're waiting. There have been several important books written by theologians about sexuality, theology of the body. If anybody's interested, I'd be happy. I'll give Bob some titles to try to illumine our way. And every one of those guys who wrote those books are in trouble with the Vatican. Not surprising. Pelvic theology is the normal name of theology as such in the Roman Church. Except it's wrong. Finally, there's a wonderful, if anybody remembers Sister Wendy Beckett, this strange looking nun who gave all these glorious lectures on art. I don't think it was an unguarded moment. She said, well, God would not have given us sex if he didn't want us to play with it. You know? I thought that was terrific. I thought that was really liberating. So everybody can go home and think about it and pray over it. Consecrate your own bodiliness to God. You know? That's the issue.